bought since we'd come back. She was in danger of being buried alive from the volume of cigarette butts she'd deposited around her. Looked like she was trying to recreate the Great Wall of China one used filter at a time. She said nothing, though I could feel her eyes on me. Was expecting something cynical or crass. Odds were she could tell I was near to snapping, and she didn't want to be the recipient. I headed down the end of the walkway and sat on the curb, stretched my legs out onto the roadway. I let the sun shine on me for a while as I dried out my sinuses. "What do you want?" I said, when I realized she had moved behind me. Would have been hard to miss the stale smell that emanated from her clothing. Well, that, and she was casting a shadow onto the road. I was never in league with Knox. "Speaking of which, how are you here? You a spy now?" "Oh, heavens no. I keyed in a self-destruct code into the module when it was time to update the password." I turned to look at her. Not sure why. I've said it before. She was entirely too adept at lying for me to ever pick up any sort of visual clue or ever trust a damn thing she said. Seems to me he would have killed you for that. I set a timer for 8 hours later. He shot the man that was using it at the time, figured it was his fault. And when he had no more use for you, he just let you go. Doesn't much seem like him. I convinced him to give me a chance. He dropped me close to the zombie front lines. You couldn't have just been killed and saved us all the trouble. I'm your friend, Michael. One of the best you have. I snorted. It was involuntary. Her words caused a gust of wind to push past my diaphragm and through my throat and nose. No, you killed one of my best friends. That I remember. Then you threatened the safety of my family if I didn't capitulate and make you a vampire. She took a heavy drag on her cigarette, maybe making sure she collected her thoughts, realizing that I still might kill her just to be done with it. I was merely testing you, seeing what you would say. I had plenty of time to take care of those that were threatening them. You're shitting me, right? This is pretty thin even for you to know. Your lies are usually much more protected than that. What, thinking on the fly, are you? Don't you remember? I was on the other side of that radio conversation. I heard the lust in your words, that perfect timing of your ultimatum. You weren't faking. What if I'd said no? Would you have packed up your rifle and gone to California like you wanted to? She finished her cigarette before she sat down next to me. Fine, I wanted to be immortal. Who wouldn't? I could think of one, I said. I'm sitting here right now wondering not just if I should kill you, but how. Nothing drawn out and painful like you deserve, but just stand up, walk behind you, grab your head, and snap that neck of yours. Can't imagine it would be that difficult. I shifted, because the concrete curb was hurting my ass. Deneau actually flinched, probably thinking I had decided to do just that. I'll admit it, her discomfort gave me satisfaction. I would have helped them no matter what. I don't know why I find myself so drawn to the Talbot clan. I don't. I thought a lot about it. Why we were both in that godforsaken townhome community together. How we've survived over all others. Most of all, why, after the 2 times I have attempted to separate from you, we are always drawn close again. There's a reason. I'm certain of it. If I could take back the wrongs I have committed against you, I would. That's the truth. I wasn't looking at her. What was the point? Possibly the most truthful thing I have said in many years. Yet my family was captured. Not sure what I have to do to prove my loyalty, Michael. She loosened the belt that held up her pants and began to pull up on her shirt. What the hell are you doing? Before I could finish that sentence, she had revealed a blue and blackened area that traveled up from her thigh to the top of her ribcage. Holy shit, I said, looking at the discolored mass of misery she had. What the hell does that prove? We've all been injured. She sighed. I killed 3 of the degenerates that were going to do harm to your family before one of them had snuck up on my location. This is the result of a kick to the side. He cracked 2 of my ribs. She then grabbed my hand and made me reluctantly touch a goose egg on the top of her head. That is where he brought the stock of his rifle down. My understanding, while I was out cold, was that Knox had come on the scene and, instead of killing us all, thought better of it and was going to use us to flush you out. I could not prevent their capture, but I am completely convinced I saved them. If not for my actions, well, your wife's virtue may not be intact, much less her face. Even if I had witnessed the event myself, I would always harbor doubt for anything Deneau said. Yet there was evidence. But evidence isn't fact. Had she manipulated the evidence to appear to corroborate her story, or had it really happened that way? No way to be sure. I don't know what to say. If that's how it happened, then thank you. She nodded. She had to understand that what she said was always going to be colored by distrust in my eyes. But I think she was satisfied with my qualified gratitude. We sat in silence for the duration of 3 cigarettes. "How's Carol?" she finally asked. "Please don't take the caring too far. It makes you seem like you're no longer portraying your character in earnest." "Fine. I'm sure you know why I'm asking. I did not want to come across as unsympathetic, but we will not be able to stay here much longer. The zombies, or Knox, or both, will be back soon." "Ah, there's Deneau. So you want to know if she's going to die soon or what, so we can get going." "I don't know the answer to that. My guess is she's never leaving this place." "And what about those of us that can?" "Don't." I stood up. "I'm well aware of the risks and dangers of staying here. I don't need you whispering in my ear about it, about how surviving is paramount, about how I have to be vigilant with the rest of my family. I'm well aware. We've already come to common ground that we're both survivors. I will take whatever steps are necessary to ensure that for me and mine. Don't push me on this one." I went back into the house. BT was standing in the doorway. "By the way," I said over my shoulder, "feel free to go it alone if that doesn't suit you." "Can I kill her now?" he asked. "Have at it." He seemed pretty confused as I walked past and back downstairs. Chapter 10. Mike, Journal Entry 10. Sanders came downstairs to pay his respects, and then motioned for me to come to the other side of the room. "Biddy says the zombies have pulled back, and we have an opportunity to get the rest of your people. We're gearing up. Wanted to know if you wanted to come." "Let me get my stuff. Nothing I can do here except be in the way." I downed 3 bottles of water in record time. As I loaded some magazines, I could feel it sloshing around in my belly. It did little to quell the hunger, but the thirst was sated. Sanders, Biddeford, Winters, and BT were all on the porch when I got there. "You can sit this one out," I said to my friend. "I'll sit this one out when you do," he said. "Thanks, man." We were cautious as we headed out, but made great time. Didn't encounter the slightest bit of resistance. Looking back, it was too good. The world wasn't built for too good anymore. In regular life, I was a fairly optimistic man, but I had a pessimistic streak as well. Call it skeptical, I guess. I don't know if that was normal or not. I never asked anyone. But I was always on edge, slightly fearful when good things happened in life, because things have to balance out, right? For every good, there has to be a bad, doesn't there? Yin and yang and all that shit. I mean, how much does it suck to always be looking up, unable to enjoy the scenery, because you're wondering when that other shoe was going to drop? Biddeford was point, not more than 25 feet ahead. He raised a fist in the air for us to stop as he approached the house where we'd left Trip. I could see blood on the porch, and the front door had been ripped from its hinges, the frame a jagged mess of splinters. "Bulkers," BT said softly. My heart was thumping. My first instinct was to rush in. Sanders saw me out of the corner of his eye as I crept up and put his arm out gently. "Let him do his job, Talbot," he said. Biddeford went up the steps slowly, tactically, rifle pressed against his shoulder. He was peering through his red dot scope, legs bent. He was swallowed up in the darkness of the foyer of what I was now convinced was a death trap. He came out 5 minutes later, though it felt like 2 hours. He was alone. He shook his head from side to side. Whatever hope I had been clinging to was ripped free from me. My head sagged. "Fuck," was all I could mutter. "Talbot, BT, I don't know if you're going to want to see this or not," Biddeford said as Sanders and Winters went toward the house. I had to. It was my way of paying some respect of a sort. The inside of the house was destroyed, furniture splintered, windows broken, carpet torn up. The floors were soaked in blood. Dozens of zombies had been killed. Bodies were strewn everywhere. The fighting had been intense, something I would not think the people who had taken temporary residence here could have ever mustered. Blood streaked the walls and dripped from the ceiling. The front door looked bad, but the safe room door was just gone, the wall around it having been pressed in from the attack. The house already looked like a horror show. The safe room appeared to be something straight from hell. Expended brass casings, blood, zombie heads, and unidentifiable body parts. I dared not look under the dead for fear of what I would find. The world began to close in on me. My peripheral vision narrowed as my brain was overwhelmed. BT caught me before I could fall onto the mat. He dragged me out of the house, with me doing the minimum to help. He said nothing as he gently helped me sit on the lawn. "How's he doing?" Sanders asked. He had come out a few minutes later. I'm not fine. Don't think I'll ever be fine again, but not gonna pass out if that's what you mean." I was physically ill. If I could have vomited up every distasteful thing I had ever witnessed, I would have done so, even if it cost me my life. "I'm not sure how to say this, so I'm just going to do it," Sanders said. "They're not all dead. Because of the, well, carnage, and it's impossible to say who, but Biddeford is confident some of them may have made it out." I turned away. A long, thick, ropey column of puke water shot forth from my mouth. My stomach, my throat, my head were ablaze, and fuck the other shoe dropping, a steel-toe boot hit me square in the face. I just laid back as Travis and Tommy came running up. "Grandma's getting worse," he said in a rush. Getting back to the safe house was a blur. For safety reasons, I'd pulled my consciousness as far back into myself as I could. It's a technique useful for just letting my body function to get me from point A to point B. Carol died later that same night. It was as peaceful a passing as I'd seen in a good long while. Not that this made it better. Not at all. Just different. Well, maybe a little better. We'd been prepared, and her family was with her. There was a small park, 2 streets over. Dug as deep a hole as we could before gently placing her in the ground. More guns were there than any ceremony for a slain officer, though we didn't fire a salute. The zombies had decided not to crash the funeral. Must have heard there wasn't a buffet. Tracy was a fucking mess. The kids little better. I'd like to say I picked up the slack this time, because if it seems like I'm the one that stands firm, it's only with Tracy's support that I do so. In that absence, I think I did all right. There was a lot of heavy lifting to be done, and though I wasn't up for the task, autopilot kicked in. I went through the motions. That was the best I could come up with. Thankfully, the zombies, for some unforeseen reason, were gone for the night, though we couldn't hold that as any sort of guarantee. BT and I'd spent most of the next day looking for any sign of Trip or any occupants that had survived the slaughter box of a bunker. Nothing. No sign of them anywhere. Even just an ill-placed snack cake wrapper, and I would have lobbied to stay and look for them longer. We had to assume they had either got away, as unlikely as that seemed, and were waiting at a rallying point, or, well, you know, been dragged down at a different spot. In terms of a fighting force, the people in that bunker were ill-prepared and would not have stood much of a chance. Hell, that's why we left them in the bunker. Yet there was ample evidence that they had fought with an unbridled fury. I had left them there to die, and Tripp's look. He had known. Why hadn't he said something? I'd killed them. My decisions had killed them. I was convinced of it. I'd placed my brother's kids in there. Ron's entire family had been reduced to Meredith. A sob escaped my lips as I thought on how close I had been to putting Nicole and my grandson in that room. But I didn't. Had I known all along? Had I sacrificed some to save others? I looked at the muzzle on my rifle, wondered for a moment what lead might taste like. Whatever the fuck is going on in that head of yours, drop it. I'm telling you to just drop it, BT said. Easier said than done, brother. He uncharacteristically hugged me roughly. We'll make it through this. He held me at arm's length like a little kid. Let me hear you say it. Talbot, say it. He prodded my silence. We'll stay like this forever if we have to. Your wife, your sister, they'll miss us both greatly, I'm sure, but I'm not moving until you say it. Tears streamed down my face. We'll make it through, I finally told him. He hugged me tight again. Damn right we will. I could feel his hot tears trail down my neck. Carol's death was crushing. That, coupled with the potential loss of 7 more, I began to continually question my decision to leave Ron's. I couldn't help it. We would have been surrounded, but we still would have been entrenched. One thing I had learned in the Marines, it is infinitely better to hold a great defensive position than spread out looking for something better. I knew that, and I had failed my platoon. What do you think, Mike? BT asked, as we watched the sun begin its descent. We got as close to the zombie line as we dared. We go back. I'll talk to Tracy, but I think tomorrow we should leave. How did this get so fucked up? He asked. We were doing all right, and then it just kinda all went to shit. I can't stand Tripp, but I would never have wanted this for him. He was close to tears. We were all riding that particular train, and it didn't appear to have any stops in the foreseeable future. I was so defeated I hadn't looked up from my feet the entire walk back. If it wasn't for BT, I would have walked into multiple obstacles. Travis gave a small wave from an upstairs window as we approached. Nobody asked if we'd seen anything. I telegraphed the answer in my mannerism. Tracy merely nodded. Her red-rimmed eyes met mine when I suggested we leave in the morning. The only surprise we had was that Winters and Kylie's sister, Brooke, wanted to come with us. Even as I welcomed Winters' expertise, I dreaded the thought of adding any more responsibility to my shoulders. I had failed in that aspect. Maybe I was just carrying too much. I had done everything I knew how to do to ensure the safety of those around me, and had come up wanting. Dano was outside early that morning. Surprisingly, she was without a cigarette. There was a nip in the air I found refreshing. It woke me up immediately and let me know I was still alive. Michael, she said, a plume of cool air coming from her mouth. No cigarette? She stink-eyed me. You might find this strange, but I'm thinking of quitting. I thought she was screwing with me. It was more likely Tripp would have given up weed than Dano would her smokes. You're serious? I asked after a moment. One can't normally live forever, she said. The more I thought about having you bite me, the more I thought about my own mortality. I'm not sure I'm up for another existential moment with you. Too bad. Perhaps you might have learned a thing or two. I do have a question. It's been bothering me for a while, and since you were with Knox, I was not with Knox, she corrected me. Yeah, you said that. Highly uncharacteristic of him to let you go. He let you go, did he not? She had me there. He is truly interested in watching what others will do in a given situation. It's similar to reality television for him. Will they rise or fall to any given obstacle? Will they ally or betray? Who will emerge on top? That sort of thing. He was a psychiatrist before this happened, if you can believe that. He is very much into studying the human condition. How do you think a madman was able to start his own army? She asked. I'd read that shrinks were among some of the most troubled people on the planet. I can't imagine how they couldn't be, listening to other fucked up people's lives 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. I would think you'd take on more psychoses than you could prescribe away. None of that mattered, unless we could outwit him with his own ego. Look, Dano, I want to know how he has been keeping tabs on us. If he had his own access to a satellite device, he would not have needed ours, or you, for that matter, I said. You do not know. Really? You are not thinking this through. He has helicopters, does he not? I feel like I would have noticed a chopper up on the sky, or at least heard it. But a plane, flying high enough, could have easily missed that. Wasn't much reason to look up these days. The enemy was on the ground. Looking up only gave them more of an opportunity to get at you. Planes. Yes, planes, I finally said. 2 Cessna Skylarks and a Lear, I believe. The zombies? I asked. What of the beasts? She asked. Does he control them? She half cackled. I doubt it. He is no Eliza. Speak of the devil, have you considered that it is possibly Tomas that draws them to you? She arched an eyebrow. Don't. I fucking knew it. Don't even try and place wedges where none need to be. If I imagined I had a dangerous adversary in my ranks, it would be you. In any case, I wouldn't look to you for an alliance. She shrugged and reached for a lighter she no longer carried. I am merely citing the fact that Eliza was a vampire, and she had control over zombies. Does it not make sense that her brother would have the same influence? Or you yourself, for that matter? I'm not suggesting it is even a conscious effort on either of your parts, but rather you ping off their sonar like a nuclear sub with fangs. You always make me feel my best. I walked away from her to help the others as we packed some provisions into the large SUVs we had rounded up. Just because you don't like it doesn't mean it's not true, she said to my back. I did the only thing afforded to me. I flipped her off. We said our goodbyes, and I thanked Sanders, his wife, and Biddeford profusely for their help. If you change your mind, you know where we're going, I told Sanders. I hoped I wouldn't have to repeat that speech ever again. Just meant we were leaving more good people behind. We had driven for about 400 miles. I'd never been on a quieter jaunt in my entire life, even when I was alone. There was no music, no talking. Thankfully, minimal crying. When an occasional cough came, it was startling to the senses, sending a jolt of adrenaline through the system. I found myself periodically looking up for some sign of Knox's aerial reconnaissance. Never saw them if he was still out there. The sun was beginning its downward trend, and I could barely keep my eyes open from the lack of outside stimulus. I would imagine this was a lot like what deprivation chambers felt like. Wouldn't doubt if I began to hallucinate, or at least get road hypnotized. Seemed like the right place to do it as we rolled into Gettysburg. The place was deserted. Like, I'm talking nuclear reactor meltdown deserted. No people, no zombies, no animals, no nothing. It was eerier than it had a right to be. Although, maybe all those Civil War soldiers were finally getting the peace and quiet they'd so brutally earned all those years ago. Free from the battle scavengers, then the war reenactors, and finally, the legions of tourists that came to have their photos taken at the gravesite of the worst loss of life on American soil. Well, I mean up until very recently, that is. Looked like we had our pick of places to spend the night. I settled on the inn at Cemetery Hill. Wasn't as keen on the name as I was on the building itself. It was a solid brick mansion that had been converted into an inn. At the moment, it did not appear that we would need to actively defend it. It looked stout enough that if it came to it, I did not think bulkers would be able to break through the walls. I watched as everyone got out of the cars, heads bowed, shoulders sagging. We were the defeated, but not the dead. Not quite yet. Winters, you help me do a quick check inside? I asked. He nodded. BT, you keep an eye on the outside? Yeah, I've got it, he said. 25 minutes later, Winters and I came out. The inn was as empty as the rest of the town. Well, not really. I was carrying a case of Moosehead beer on my shoulder. I cracked the box open and tossed a beer to Winters and BT. Justin and Travis came up just as I was popping the top off one for myself. There wasn't anyone, save the little kids, that didn't grab one. I sat down on one of the many benches that were on the large wraparound porch. "Can't believe you found a case of beer in there," BT said as he sat down on the bench next to mine. "Not just one," I said, tipping my beer to him. "I don't know what convention they were about to have come into town, but the bar is stocked, and so is the holding room and the kitchen. There's a ton of stuff. The meat and anything else in the walk-in freezer is bad, but they have shelves and shelves of canned goods. I'm going to talk to Tracy and everyone else, but I'm going to advocate that we stay here for a while." "You sure, Mike?" "I think we need this. You saw this town. There's nothing for days." "I don't know why that is," I said, briefly looking skyward for the shoe. I shrugged it off in favor of another beer. "Maybe we're finally catching a break. A minute to recharge and regroup. Get our minds screwed back on." "Well, at least the rest of us can. Yours was barely on before this shit started. I would imagine your threads are all rusted out by now. Maybe even stripped. Never be able to seat it right. It's probably just sitting up there, hanging by one twist. Stiff breeze would knock it down. You done?" "You serious? About staying, I mean." "I am, buddy." "How much booze did you say there was?" "More than we could drink in a good long while." "And you haven't considered the as-of-yet unseen reason why this is a ghost town?" he asked. "Of course, but, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, and I don't even know if it's believable. But what if no one is here, including the zombies, because this place is so damn haunted? Like Amityville Horror haunted or Casper haunted?" "Dunno. Maybe both. Part of me loves the idea of staying here for a little while. But I gotta say I'm not looking forward to finding out why everything is pristine." "That's the spirit," I said. "Did you mean the pun?" "Pun?" I smiled. Chapter 11. Mike Journal Entry 11. 1 day turned to 2, then a week, then a month. Finally, we were pushing 2 months in one place. No knocks, no zombies, no vampires, and more importantly, no fucking death. That first week, I did a steady diet of beer and vodka and maybe a giant can or two of beans. Not a great mix, and truth be told, I can't stand beans. Weird what you want to eat when you're fucked up. If we weren't all so busy healing, it would have been a damn near perfect vacation. Room service was a little spotty, though. I spent a lot of time wandering around the battlefields. Strange sensation being there. Could just about feel the ghosts of the dead soldiers swirling about as he walked among fields. It didn't help that more times than not there would be a thin mist coating the entire place like they were congregating. I wondered if other places around the world had the same phenomenon. Did the beaches in Normandy feel this way? Waterloo, Stalingrad. So many lives lost. Their bodies on the ground before most even realized they'd passed over. That had to do something to a soul, didn't it? Can't imagine how much it would suck being confused that you were actually dead, seeing your own face in the dirt. I could see how one could just remain stuck in easily one of the worst times in your life. Still, though, I found solace among those poor, tortured men. Felt that I had a connection. I'd seen people fall. The shock. And maybe I wasn't completely dead, but parts of me were. We shared that kinship. "Weird place, isn't it?" BT asked as he came up alongside me. He was holding out a new bottle of vodka. "It is. And didn't you hear me this morning? I said I wasn't drinking ever again." "I figured you meant until noon. Then the clock resets. My insides are begging me to stop. Who are you going to listen to, that weak-ass stomach of yours or the man with the hooch?" He was still holding the bottle out. "Is this peer pressure? Because if I go back to the inn today shit-eat again, I want to be able to tell Tracy I was forced. Call it whatever you want." He pulled the bottle in, spun off the top, and took a chug that made it look like he was drinking water. "Ah, smooth," he said in a gravelly voice as he wiped the sleeve of his free arm across his mouth. "Yeah, sounds it. This the bottom shelf shit? I choked out after taking a particularly burning shot. That the bottle was made of plastic, that should have been my first clue. Don't be a candy ass. He took the bottle back, and another swig. Woo! He yelled. If that doesn't make you feel like a man, I don't know what does. Sex. Yeah, sex makes me feel like a man. Oh, and peeing standing up. That's a pretty big one, too. We sat on a felled oak, killed half the bottle as we watched the sun climb up the sky. I've been here before, BT said after a while. Linda wanted to see it. Didn't hold much appeal for me then, but... So you came? Of course I did. Lot different back then, more of a tourist trap vibe to it. There were stands that sold food and Chinese-made replicas. Hundreds of people were out here walking around, taking thousands of pictures. There was still this strange undercurrent, a feeling that we were intruding on something private. But nothing like it is now. I think if we had a few trip stores, we'd be able to watch a battle. That's how close we are to the veil here. He paused. His eyes filled with tears, though they had not fallen yet. I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I miss that crazy stoner. I miss them all. Your brother, Mad Jack, your father, the kids. I think he would have run through the entire list, but I wasn't up for that. I was doing my best to rebuild the shattered parts of me. I wasn't ready to think on them all just yet, especially on my way to another drunk. I cut him off abruptly, and he looked at me knowingly. Sorry, he said. This was a good place to stop. I didn't think so at first. I was worried I wouldn't be able to stop thinking about Linda, but I feel differently now. We're healing up a bit, putting band-aids on the gaping wounds, maybe throwing a stitch on them to keep them closed. I even have a scab or two. I agreed, though I didn't say anything. Typical guy. I figured my silence was an affirmation of his words, and like a typical guy, he understood that. Women are wonderful creatures, far superior to men in a countless number of ways. This isn't one of them. More can be said within the silence two men make than the 5,000 words two women speak. I've got to tell you something, Mike, but I don't know how you're going to feel about it. He paused. I again said nothing, waiting to hear his words. Your sister. I've already heard about it, man. You've got dibs, I told him. No, man. Hear me out. I love her. Now I turned. I don't know what I thought he was going to say. Maybe something like, she was a wildcat, and no brother ever wanted to hear those words. But I knew this was different. Really, man? I asked. I do, man. You realize that's the same woman that tried to cave my skull in with a frozen pita bread when I was like 10. If anything, man, that makes me love her more. I'll drink to that, I told him, as I took a swig. We were facing toward the inn, and we saw Tracy coming from a long way off. She had her arms crossed in front of her to ward off the chill in the air, which always seemed to be about 10 degrees cooler whenever you stepped onto the battlefield. I had thoughts of hiding the bottle, but that would only piss her off. I reeked of booze, and you didn't need to be a cop to realize I shouldn't be operating heavy machinery. She sat down next to me and grabbed it from my hands. Took a longer drag on it than I'd ever seen her drink anything. I held up the bottle. Damn, woman, you planning on leaving any for us? This is a strange place, she said, looking out over the grass. A lot of peace to be found here, considering the events that took place. You think that's why it's so peaceful? Like maybe all the bad that could ever happen here already has? Shit, that's deep. BT said. Like maybe this is hallowed ground, he added. You tell him? Tracy asked once again, taking the bottle from my hands. Just did. And? She asked, after she finished drinking. If you have kids, are they going to be Talbots or Tynes? I asked. Why would I burden them like that? He smiled. Anyway, I've got to figure my genes would completely wipe out anything Talbot-related. Too much information, I told him. B.T., do you mind if Mike and I have a few minutes? Not at all. Right now, I'm surprisingly ready for a nap. He got up and rubbed his ass. As he started to walk away, he turned. Your sister is a lot saner than you. Yeah, that's what you think, She's just luring you in close, so when she springs the crazy trap, there's nowhere for you to go. I'd get out while you still can. Fuck you, Mike, he walked away. I called after him, and no matter what you think about your oversized jeans, those kids will have Talbot in them, and then you get to have many little berserkers running around, going to fuck up everything you think you know about kids. Tracy nodded in agreement. He's telling the truth. I wish I had been warned. Hey, I turned. We watched as BT crested a small rise and then disappeared. How are you doing? She asked in all seriousness. Me? I could ask that about you. I'm better. It will be a long process, but I'm better. It's you, Mike, that I'm worried about. You take all of these deaths so personally. Wait, that's not the right word. We all take them personally. These are family and friends, so close as to be indistinguishable from each other. What I meant to say is that you take personal responsibility for them. Like whether we live or die is on you. Our lives are your burdens. Maybe you're the de facto leader. We do turn to you when we're in trouble because somehow that crazy, beautiful mind of yours excels in crisis situations. She reached out and held my hand. But the things that are happening, the people that are dying, those that get hurt, that is not your fault, Michael. And I won't sit around and watch as you beat yourself up about it. The world is not a good place right now. Well, that's an understatement. But the truth is, it has always been a little fucked up. Always had some less than desirable qualities, basically since the dawn of man. And even before, I'm sure there were asshole dinosaurs as well. The raptors. Yeah, they were the dicks of the dino world. Exactly. Are the stego slaughters your fault, too? So you're saying that none of this is my fault because raptors were tearing into the flesh of slower prey millions of years ago? Yes. That's exactly what I'm saying. How much of this crap have you had? She was shaking a three-quarter empty bottle in front of her face. Listen, you dunderhead. You make that up? Maybe. And it sounds fitting. Stop. Just stop blaming yourself. Bad things, horrible things are going to happen to people, have always happened to people. It is inevitable, and it is not because of you. Do you understand? So, wait, I'm confused. Am I the raptor or not? I think of you more as the caveman with the big hard club. Just shut up and come back to the inn with me. I thought maybe we could take a nap together. I'm not really all that tired. Oh my God, when did you get so thick? It dawned on me where she was going with this, but I relished the idea of her having to explain it. I want you to come and lay with me, she said slowly, raising her eyebrows and enunciating like she was talking to someone who might not have a complete grasp of his faculties. Well, I guess that was the definition of dunderhead. Say it, I replied. Say it. You heard me. She looked around, clearly embarrassed. They don't care. I was referring to the soldiers. I'm not going to. Tell me how much you want my pelvic thrust, my buttering of your biscuits, good old baking of the potato. What the hell are you talking about? Come on, a little lust and thrust, bump and grind, icing the cookie. I winked at her. You keep going on like that and you're going to be playing solo. She bent low and stood up slowly, making sure I got a good view. Not coming until you say it, I smiled. I waited. She waited. Fine. I want to get to know you in the biblical sense. She rolled her eyes as she said it. I didn't move. Fry the bacon, grease the pan, scramble some eggs. Oh, you dirty girl. I can't believe you kiss your kids with that mouth. Not sure if I want to have sex now or go and eat. I grabbed her and twirled her around. My head and stomach did not thank me for that, considering the booze I had circulating throughout my body. Our little horizontal dancing had to wait for a few hours while I slept it off, but it was worth it. As humans, we don't have it all figured out. But lovemaking, true, tender lovemaking is damn near a reboot on all that ails you. I was staring up at the ceiling, a sheen of sweat covering my entire body, about as close to bliss as I had been in a while. "You want to leave," I said. The thought seemingly randomly entered my head. I never figured out how she did that. "This wasn't some ploy to break it to you, if that's what you mean, but yes. I love it here, I do. But we're no better here than we were at Ron's, isolated and alone. I want to give our kids some chance at normalcy, or at least a reenacted version of it." She had turned on her side and was rubbing a hand on my chest. "This place, it's somehow, it's like an oasis in a desert of death. We found this refuge and we've taken it. But this place itself was a massive killing ground. Makes you think. I honestly think we could spend the rest of our lives here unbothered," she said. They were nice words to hear. I didn't believe them. Oh, I wanted to, but even I'm not that delusional. "But this," she stroked my hair, "this thing that you and I have, this marriage of mind and soul," she began. "And body," I finished, pulling her close. "I want the kids to be able to have that too." "Mood killer. Put that thing away. I'm trying to talk to you. Not entirely my fault. Look where your hand is." A little bell went off in my head as we launched into round two. The next morning, we all got together and talked about it. I couldn't help but notice how much less room we needed now. I was thankful this wasn't a normal meeting spot where I'd have to see all of the empty chairs that would never again be filled up. By the end of the discussion, it was more or less unanimous that we would head out in a couple of days. There was little in the way of dissent, but some were more reluctant to go than others. I mean, how could there not be a desire to stay in the relative safety of our new location? After running so hard that we thought our lungs were going to burst, we'd finally been able to stop, to decompress, to catch our breaths, and maybe even work some on our morale. Hell, we just had canned peaches. "I'm gonna miss this place," BT said. Everyone else had left, most to prepare for the next leg of the journey. "Me too," I told him. "You think maybe there's the same type of haven at the Battle for Little Bighorn?" "Maybe, but not for you white people," he said. I just ignored him. I mean, so much death, maybe keeping a little peace around it. "Could be," he said, picking up where I was going. "Pretty much just plains and rolling hills there, I think. Might not be the most comfortable place to set up camp. For sure there won't be a southern manor house. I was just thinking it might be a safe stop along the way." "You think the world will ever be back to normal?" he asked, completely out of the blue. "I can barely remember what normal was like." "I guess someday, right?" "You really believe that?" he asked back. I guess he didn't catch the upward lilt of my words when I answered him with a question. "I want to think it will, BT, you know. Or why bother? The real question is, will we ever be back to normal? I'm not so worried about us. Not sure anyone could ever come back from this. Not fully. I mean, just too much damage done. We can live normal lives." He stressed normal. "Not sure we'll ever completely feel it, though." "Where are you going with this, man? I'm trying to push that from my mind. And see, that's the thing. You'll forever carry this around, like a heavy suit of armor. No, my hope is we can pass a normal life, or at least a peaceful one, to those that come after us. For our legacy, to be able to do great things, unencumbered by the disasters we brought on ourselves." I was pondering his thoughts, when it hit me like a ripped foul ball down the third baseline. "No fucking way!" I stood up, pointing a finger at him. "What the hell are you talking about?" He was looking around with an alarmed expression on his face. "I can't believe this." I was scratching the back of my head with both hands as I walked across the room away from him. "Not many people can figure out what's going on in that head of yours, Mike, even with instructions. You want to explain it to me? I left my lunatic to loose a dictionary in my other pants." "That's what I'm talking about. Maybe you should have kept it in your pants." I was smiling. Maybe there was a veiled threat, but yeah, smiling. "There's still no dictionary." He was getting mad. "Use the first three letters. That's what you should have kept there. What the fuck? ABC? I shook my head and pointed at him. What the fuck is a DIC? Oh, a dick. Yeah, that's what you're being. My sister's pregnant, isn't she? He reeled back a step like I had throat-punched him with the words. I don't even know what you're talking about. I'd give you the birds and the bees, but we're talking about my sister, and, you know, just... Ew. There's nothing ew about it. That step he'd taken backward turned into two forward, and now he was pointing a finger at me. I was still smiling. I think the BT doth protest too much. His finger came down and his head bowed slightly. I told her I wouldn't say anything. She's gonna kill me. I don't think my sister is 110 pounds. What the fuck are you worried about? You seriously did not just say that. Any chance Tracy could beat you in an arm wrestle? Fuck no. Boxing match? I doubt it, but she does have a mean right hook. Okay, so physically you probably have her, right? Safe to say, I answered in as masculine a way as I could, knowing exactly where we were headed. Yet I've seen you cower from that woman. Cower seems like a little much, I said. Want me to get her in here and we'll discuss it? Fuck no! You're gonna keep your trap shut about this. I am? I asked. You looked like you had something else to tell me earlier on that log. I was drunk, man. I'm fine now. And just because your sister can kick my ass doesn't mean I can't kick yours. That's a reasonable assumption, I told him. Assumption? That leaves room for doubt. Don't worry, man, I won't tell anyone. Not even your wife. I'm serious, because you know the first person she'll go to when she finds out. Fine, fine, man, stop posting up on me. I get nervous with your chest in my face. You flex one of those pecs, I'll get a black eye or a broken nose. And for what it's worth, man, I'm thrilled. I know it's a weird guy thing, and we don't generally say it to one another. But I love you, man. I do. So much so, I will take only half the normal dowry for my sister. I'd like two goats and a llama. Yeah, I love you too, for some unknown reason. And just one goat. You can't negotiate a dowry. Two goats or nothing. What are you talking about, Mike? Tracy had come in. What did you hear? BT was doing his best not to look guilty. He was only marginally successful. Goats. Something about goats. Tracy was looking from me to BT. Spill it. She wasn't looking at either of us as she waited for an answer. BT had sweat on his forehead. Mike, Tracy now had me in her crosshairs. It's not mine to say, I told her, hoping some childhood honor thing would give me enough of a shield from her. She sighed and refocused on BT. He was holding firm, though I think he would have cracked soon. Is this about Lindsay's pregnancy? She asked. BT looked accusingly at me, like he wanted to thump me on the head. Wait, man, when the hell did you see me leave this conversation to tell her? He was thinking back along the timeline, seeing if there was a way to blame me. I'm surprised the two of you know how to put your pants on in the morning. She's been sick every morning for the last week, and I've personally caught her twice with huge cans of green beans, eating them as fast as she can get them into her mouth. We just looked at her. Good Lord. Last time I checked, none of the Talbots are all that big on greens. She's absolutely craving them. Don't say anything, BT pleaded. Of course. But there are prenatal vitamins we're going to need to get. She looked at me. Drugstores and hospitals were bad places to go. Not so hard to believe the number of previously straight people that wanted to chemically check out during the Z-Pock. Add into that, the shops were every druggie and junkie's nirvana. Every other group was concerned about Band-Aids, penicillin, and Tylenol. And condoms, the thought occurred. Anyway, the vast majority of times he could not find anything in there. Not even baby aspirin. Compound the likelihood that you weren't going to find anything with the fact that these places were usually ground zero for zombies and the aforementioned druggies, and he had a recipe just waiting to brew disaster. I think I have an idea, I said. Oh, this ought to be good, BT folded his arms. All right, we all know how shitty hospitals and drugstores can be. They nodded at my words. What if we find some doctor offices? We rifle through the patient records until we find some pregnant patients, get a list if they've been prescribed the vitamins, and then we go to their house. It has some salient points, BT said, but you're presuming that the woman no longer needs her meds. It sucks, man, but the reality is that most people don't need much of anything anymore, I said. We wait until tomorrow. We'll get going early. It was a little while later. I had been reading a book, of all things. I didn't think I'd ever have enough time for that luxury again. The light was beginning to fail, and I was giving myself a headache straining to see the print on the page. I decided at this point that maybe some outside air would keep away the spike that was about to pierce my head. Tommy was on the front porch. He was standing, had a far-off look in his eyes. "Hey, kid," I said. He barely acknowledged my presence, if at all. I was heading out to climb a knoll on the far side of the field. I found peace there. Though the thick, swirling mist that was rolling in should have been a deterrent, it wasn't. The only ghosts that were going to hurt me would be the ones of my own creation. The mist eddied around me as I walked to meet it. Its cooling effect chilled me as it rushed past to hide the inn from me. It should have been eerie, but it wasn't. Not then, at least. I kept walking. The mist was getting thicker with each step, thicker than I'd seen it before. It got to the point where I could have been walking amongst the clouds. I could not see my feet touching ground. Right there, I started thinking about how bad it would be if the zombies decided to attack. I'd get virtually no warning. This mist was as bad as being in a pitch-dark room, only everything was white instead of black. "I've been waiting for you," the disembodied voice said. Didn't think it was a Civil War soldier, as it was definitely female. And not only female, but it spoke with a European accent. Pain. I gripped my rifle tight and brought it halfway up, though there was nothing I could aim at. "You contain so much power, yet you will not allow yourself to fully realize it. Instead, you foolishly rely on others and the crude weapons they create, hoping to keep the monsters at bay." "What do you want?" I asked, doing my best to find the direction the voice was coming from. It was impossible due to the diffusion the ground cloud was causing. There was a laugh that carried with it no warmth. It sounded like the sigh of someone long dead, which in hindsight was a very accurate description. "At first, it was merely curiosity," she trailed on. I felt a stinging sensation on my left side. I looked down to realize I'd been stabbed, just enough to let me know what had happened, to draw first blood, but nothing dangerous yet. I was in trouble. I felt very much like the mouse this cat was toying with. Three more strikes, so lightning fast I did not even register the pain of the first one until the blade had been removed the third time. As much as I wanted to shoot blindly or to lash out, throwing wild punches, swinging my arms back and forth in a vain attempt to hit the nearly invisible entity that was haunting me, I did not. A part of me knew that to do so would only encourage her, that she would absolutely realize how vulnerable I was, and fuck if I wanted to give her that satisfaction. "What is it now?" I asked breathlessly, referring to her opening statement, hoping that if she talked, she would be much less likely to attack. Like any woman, though, she was able to multitask. I was struck a fifth time, a gash appearing on the right side of my face. "Oh, well, curiosity has yielded to revenge. I thought perhaps I had outgrown that particular emotion, that I changed sufficiently enough that I would not be driven by my baser, former human instinct. But I was wrong. Poor, sweet, damaged Sophia. I did not love her. I do not think me capable of real love, but I did care for her, in a way only a vampire can care for another of its kind. She deserves some measure of remittance, does she not? Take me. Have your measure." That laughter returned. It chilled far more than the mist. I turned slowly, as it was seemingly all around me, You believe yourself worthy of that measure. Wisely or not, I said nothing. Tomas would be a start to the payment I feel due, but that does not include the damage done to my charity. Should I hold you accountable for these things, though you had little or no part in them? I am willing to accept my responsibility and all of theirs. I was trying to strike a deal with one that did not appear open to negotiations. I could have had any of you, at any time. You are not nearly as vigilant as you believe yourselves to be. She needed to be stopped. I knew where this was going. It seemed vampires like to hold grudges. She wanted to take vengeance from everything she imagined done to her on those around me. And that I could not allow. I undid the buckle that held my rifle up in its tactical position. I stood up straight, closed my eyes, and took in a deep breath. I didn't even know if I could produce a flicker, but it was nigh time to fight fire with fire, if possible. Pain came in again, this wound a little deeper than the others, as if she was aware of what I was attempting and didn't like it. That was good for me, to a point. It meant she was concerned, but there was no doubt she could finish me off long before I became a viable threat. Now I could sense her movements within the mist that hid her. I lashed out, mostly missing, but there was some satisfaction to the punch that glanced off the side of her head. Ah, there it is. I could sense she was smiling. You feel it, don't you? The ancient power. It courses through your veins like an untamed beast, yet you dare to chain it. As if you could, she came in again. I moved enough to miss the thrust of her blade. There was an oomph as I put a foot in her midsection, sending her on her way. Leave, pain. Take what remains of charity and the zombies and leave. Forget you ever stepped foot in a new world. The zombies, she paused. What do you believe I have to do with those filthy, living, dead things? You don't control them? I asked. I would rather return to the well from which I originated than sully myself with those hideous creatures. Then she laughed. You don't know, do you? For all your power, you don't. What are you talking about? I asked, partly because I wanted to know what she knew, but more importantly, this kept her from stabbing me. I don't know all, Michael. But someone in your group does, and on some level you know that as well. Mr. T! Tommy shouted. It sounded like he was approaching, but this fog was making it difficult to tell. If you yell out to him, I will kill you, and then him. I have no love for the one that betrayed his own sister. Now you lie. You don't care. You yourself said vampires are incapable of love. Why avenge a death for someone that means nothing? It is not that I cared for Eliza, but a betrayer of one's kind must be taught a lesson. You should heed the words that you and I have spoken, Michael. If you somehow survive me, they may very well revisit you. I don't know what you were talking about. I've made no betrayal. The mist began to recede, giving me more sightlines. It rolled out like the tide, thankfully taking pain with it. When I felt she had gone, I wiped the blood from my face and lifted my shirt to see the 5 wounds she had given me. I was thinking about what she had said. If vampires were incapable of love, but betrayal and avenging fit in very nicely with their mindsets, Tommy could indeed be dangerous. Mr. T, are you all right? Tommy asked as he ran toward me. You knew, didn't you? He had a confused look on his face. You knew she was out here. I let my shirt drop down and picked up my rifle. Adrenaline had been keeping the pain away, but now the cuts throbbed like anything created like a sharp blade is wont to do. I thought she might be, he confessed, but I wasn't sure. A heads up when I walked by you would have been appreciated. When did you walk by me? He asked. I could not detect any sort of deception in his voice. He must have been focused on something pretty big to have missed me and our greeting. The zombies. Are they your doing? What? You heard me. What did she say? Are you afraid she told me something you don't want me to know?